Hey gang, welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN, republicbroadcasting.org. It's election central for free speech. A lot of people don't know this, but there's still elections. We still have elections. To what extent they are rigged, that's a completely another matter, but they are elections, and this is primary night in five states, and we're going to be covering it. But the thing is, you guys listening to us in Radio Land on Wednesday afternoon are going to know a lot more about the results than we will tonight as we're recording it. So we're going to just check in with the elections at the very end, say a couple of things at the end of the show, and then maybe we'll be proven wrong. Who knows? But, that's part of the show. So it's Election Central of Free Speech, and keep this free speech going. Go to republicbroadcasting.org, click on the donate button, and follow the instructions. What would those instructions be, Jeremy?
Well, you can mail your check or money order payable to RBN, mail it to Republic Broadcasting Network, 2251 Double Creek Drive, Suite 302, Round Rock, Texas 78664, and you can call in your debit or credit card number to Mike or Julie. Julie's on the day shift and Mike's on the night shift, and donate to keep free speech alive, because free speech is only funded by we the people.
Well, how about the weekend?
The weekends, Sam will take your donations if you call in with a debit or credit card.
Okay.
But yeah, so if you want to mail a check, just make it payable to RBN. Check a money order,
or you can mail cash. Cash is as good as money.
Yeah, anonymous cash. Just put your cash in an envelope, wrap it in tinfoil, maybe, and mail it to the address that I specified.
Yeah, I wrap everything in tinfoil. Keeps it from getting irradiated.
Tinfoil hats.
Oh yeah. Tinfoil underwear. Because my brain, as Woody Allen said, my brain, that's my second favorite organ.
Yes.
Well.
So okay. Anyway, what do we got tonight on the Patrick and Jeremy Show, part two?
All right. Well, we've got Azov Tunnels. We've got Musk. It's a musky place. America's becoming very musky. And an essay. Tell me why I care. In 50 words or less. That sounds like fun. And bioweapons. But let's start with the Azov tunnels. Okay, so you've got an article here that you sent to me. And I've been looking into this. But run down the article for us.
From Russia Today, Ukrainian fighters of Azovstal surrendered to Russia. Moscow says that 265 members of the Nationalist Azov Battalion and Ukrainian troops have already laid down their arms. A video of members of the Nationalist Azov Battalion and Ukrainian troops surrendering to Russian forces after being holed up for weeks at the Azov steel plant in Mariupol has been released by the Russian Defense Ministry. Yeah, so we covered this for sure last week, maybe even the week before. The Azov so-called neo-Nazis were holding up in these tunnels of the steel factory, and they had a lot of civilian people down there with them for whatever reason. I mean, civilians were allowed to escape the war zone, were they not? So why were civilians down in these tunnels with Azov? Human shield?
Oh yeah, definitely human shield. The heroic president of Ukraine, the heroic Jewish president, who totally has no animosity towards ethnic Ukrainians, despite accusing them of having pogromed and holocausted his ancestors for hundreds of years. Has totally no animosity towards them. He had ordered them all to fight to the death. And Well, as it turned out, a number of them, a fairly large number, decided, you know, fighting to the death part, forget that. And they came out and surrendered. And I get my information to a large extent from Alex Mercolis on the Duran, the Duran. And but his information verifies my suspicions. So basically, retroactively, after the troops started surrendering in large numbers, Zelensky ordered them to surrender because he wants them to live. They're heroes, and heroes should live. Now, of course, he had been saying that they were heroes because they were fighting to the death to support his brutal democracy, to defend his brutal democracy. But they started surrendering, and so now he's coming out and saying, oh, yeah, well, originally the story was, yes, we've reached a negotiated settlement where our troops will be, you know, they will be sent back to Ukraine in exchange for, you know, Russian prisoners of war or something like that. But of course, that's not happening. None of that is happening. So now he's retroactively changed the story to, yes, I ordered them to surrender because they're heroes and they should live. When the fact was, he ordered them to fight to the death, and after a while, you know. And the thing is, there's always been talk that a few people have, you know, a few people have surrendered. A few people have managed to get out and surrender. But in general, it's been said, and I think that the evidence for this is going to be forthcoming, and there's already some out there, that if you tried to surrender, if you indicated you were going to surrender, the loyal Azov battalion members would shoot you. So, you know, the civilians were used as human shields. The military who didn't want to be there didn't really have much of a choice in the matter. But it got to the point where you just started having surrenders en masse. And now, retroactively, the president is saying that he ordered it. But he didn't. He didn't. And, you know, he was just willing to sacrifice all of these people who in the end decided they didn't want to be sacrificed.
So the besieged fighters in Azovstal, who suffered heavy losses and lacked food and water, had been given numerous opportunities to surrender by the Russian forces over the past few weeks. But until yesterday, they rejected the offers and demanded to be sent to a third country. However, earlier in May, they agreed to release civilians from the plant. Moscow says the people were held there as hostages and used as human shields. So the Azov battalion were holding civilians in this plant, and the civilians were not allowed to be released, even though Russia offered such an opportunity. So, yeah, I mean, that's, you know, from RT today, I mean, civilians being held in Azovstal as human shields, and they were starved of food and water. So, yeah. Anyway. Well,
and this is major. Mariupol, where the Azovstal steel plant was located, has been the major battlefield. Ukraine's lost this battle. You know, they might be able to point to a skirmish here or there where they had the advantage, but in these major battles that are taking place in the Donbass, Ukraine's losing, and they're going to lose. And all that this American/NATO support for the Ukrainian government in terms of money, in terms of weapons, all it does is drag on the misery and allow for more and more and more people to die in this meat grinder on both sides, with the aim of ramping up anti-Russian settlement, because the real war that they're waging is the economic war. That's the real war. Is they think they're going to strangle the Russian economy, and which will lead to regime change. I think they've miscalculated there. I don't think that they've miscalculated the Ukrainian military, because I think that they knew all along that the Ukrainian military was going to get demolished, and they didn't care. In fact, that's better. The more Ukrainian deaths, and the more Russian deaths, the more deaths in general, the better. The in terms of the battle going on, the warfare going on between Russia and Ukraine in Ukraine, the objective is not a military victory in Ukraine. The objective is to maximize death and thus maximize worldwide outrage at Russia. I don't think it's going to work.
Yeah, it's interesting. We talked about this, I think, weeks ago. And it was published also in the Daily Stormer that Russia is sort of waiting for these people to just become hungry and eventually come out. They could have flooded Azovstal. They could have sent troops in and violently taken them out. They didn't. They just waited them out. And so, yeah, here you have civilians hungry and thirsty and ready to surrender, come out eventually.
Yeah. And obviously, I'm pretty sure that Vladimir Putin knows the score, that he knows the more death and suffering, that death and suffering on both sides is an objective of the architects of the war in the U.S. State Department and in the NATO bureaucracy. That he's aware of that, and so he's trying not to play into that. He's not doing shock and awe a la Colin Powell and General Schwarzkopf or whoever else was involved in those wars in Iraq. He's not doing that, and yet this is a war, and he has military objectives to meet, and so there's going to be a certain amount of death and suffering. And just how the West, the NATO, State Department, they're just trying to maximize it. He's trying to minimize it, but he can't eliminate it.
Yeah, but I mean, that's the whole purpose that these people held out in Azovstal. Was to try to just create more death and suffering and make Putin look bad.
Yeah. It goes beyond the death and suffering, though, because if, let's just say February 15th, a week or so before the start of hostilities, a couple of days before the Russian recognition of the breakaway republics, okay? So up until the mid-February, you could have had a negotiated settlement that would have looked like this, because this had been Russia's position for 8 years. Just, meet the demands, meet the requirements of the Minsk Accord. So stop attacking the breakaway republics. Okay, stop your military attack on them, which has cost already 14,000 lives at that point. Give up your NATO membership drive. Recognize Crimea. And in exchange, you can have Donetsk and Lugansk incorporated back into Ukraine, although with guarantees of autonomy. That deal was on the table. The longer this goes on, the farther away from that you're going to get. The more Russia has to sacrifice, the more people who die, that deal's not on the table anymore. So Lugansk and Donetsk are never going to be reincorporated into Ukraine. Okay, I'm not sure what day of the year that became impossible, but that's long gone. And, yeah. Now the question is, well, what now could be a negotiated settlement? So if the Ukrainians were to go now, they're not going to get those two areas. What else are they not going to get? They wouldn't have had to be demilitarized, right? Now demilitarization is on the table. Before the Zelensky government and the Jewish coup d'etat government could have remained in place. Can that happen now? What about Odessa? And the longer this goes on, I mean, if this goes on longer and longer and longer, they're not Odessa, that whole province will be captured. Will that ever be recovered? So, I mean, the longer this goes on, the worse a negotiated settlement for Ukraine is going to be. So not only are they losing people, not only are the people who the survivors suffering, but the entity known as the Republic of Ukraine is going to get smaller and smaller, and you know, everything gets worse the longer this goes on.
Yeah, and I mean, many other European nations are calling for negotiations. You know, you had the whole Turkey and Finland thing. Turkey blocking Finland from joining NATO. Turkey's obviously not on board. I think that these leaders, even though controlled, want negotiations rather than world war. You know, they don't want a world war with Russia.
Yeah, Turkey is the one country in the world that is just a wild card with Erdogan in control. They have switched sides over and over. Like in Syria, they shot down the Russian jet. Then 6 months later, they're on Russia's side. Why did they jump onto Russia's side for a while? Well, because the West tried to overthrow Erdogan, and Putin apparently let him know what was going on in time where he could stave off the coup d'etat. But, you know, he goes back and forth. And so right now he's putting his foot down and saying there's no way he is going to approve NATO membership for Finland and Sweden, which would be a veto. Turkey, as every country in NATO, all 30 countries have a veto power, and he's saying he is going to use it. He's not saying he might. He's saying he is going to use it. But, you know, what's he complaining about? Is he complaining about the war per se? No, he's complaining about Sweden and Finland hosting all of these Kurdish refugees from Turkey, and I guess from, you know, neighboring areas, who have organizations there that Turkey considers to be terrorist organizations. So, you know, Finland and it could be a power play, or Finland and Sweden could wind up saying, okay, we're going to kick out these organizations. They could. They might. And then if that happened, then Turkey would drop its objections. On the other hand, you know, Turkey, Finland and Sweden are led by women. And they're like, we can't kick out these Muslim men. We, you know, look at all we went through to get all these Muslim men here. We're not going to kick them out. So I don't know what's going to happen there, but like, Turkey's completely a wild card, and so we don't know what'll happen there. And then of course you got Boris Johnson saying, I don't care if they're in NATO or not in NATO. Britain is going to militarily support Finland and Sweden, which right now, to the extent they're under any kind of threat, the only reason they would be under any kind of threat is because they're joining a military alliance that is at war with Russia. That's the only threat that they're the only reason around there any kind of threat.
Yeah, the West really embracing this war thing. That's interesting. They're so disconnected.
Yeah. Well, anyway, we're at the break, so we're gonna take a little bit of time off, and we'll be right back.
Yeah.
To everyone he meets, he stays a stranger. Every move he makes, another chance he takes. The odds are he won't live to see tomorrow. Secret agent man, secret agent man, they've given you a number. Hadn't checked.
For the past 14 years, it's been my privilege to host the National Intel Report on RBN, to offer a platform to interview exceptional guests, to provoke critical thought, and examine evidence, whether real, fake, or somewhere in between, and allow our audience to call in and participate with your input and questions, in order to help us all reach an educated decision and arrive at our own truth. Our world has changed. It's now been turned on its head. Real is now considered fake, and mainstream fake is now pushed as real, rather than any clear thinking, consensus, or rationale.
Those few remaining beacons of light, the ones still shining through the mainstream media lies, propaganda, and deception, are being viciously attacked at every level through attempts at censorship, threatening advertisers, jailing hosts, and even killing journalists brave enough to speak the truth to you. We are in a war for our very freedom and existence, and through these despicable acts, freedom haters, collectivists, and communitarians have shown they will stop at nothing to blot out these last few beacons of light. Truth is becoming increasingly more difficult to unmask, just as the term unmasking itself is spoken by those usually anonymous sources. They promote their lies, wishing to mask the truths by ignoring it, vilifying it, or conspiratorializing it into a black hole abyss.
Regrettably, RBN has reached the tipping point, and through internal audit and actuarial review, it has now been determined that the only life raft of survival to this network is to go the way of PBS, that being audience-supported. Like a cornered animal, the left with veracity is pulling out all the stops with every effort to effectively blacken our beacon forever. Help us, folks. Help yourselves. Don't let our light stop shining. Our motto has always been, because you can handle the truth. It's time to review your budget, folks. If you want the truth to keep flowing through RBN, go to republicbroadcasting.org and become a regular monthly donor of 30, 40, 50, or 100 or more a month and ensure you keep the truth flowing.
Standing 6'4", weighing in 245 pounds of crime-fighting, political science-analyzing brawn, ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Patrick Slattery.
So, Mike, get off this anti-cicada agenda.
I'm a born-again traditional Christian, and my favorite possessions are right here on my nightstand. That would be the King James Bible and my .357 revolver.
I'd rather be ruled by Chinamen than Jews.
Cool it with the anti-Semitic remarks, right?
Just because you steal an election and terminate the republic doesn't mean you terminate the people in the republic, because we're still here.
I'm not taking the vaccine. F*** you, Bill Gates.
There was a way forward still on January 6th. What needed to be done is to object to every single state.
The COVID-19 virus was the setup. The vaccine could very well be the bioweapon.
The Patrick and Jeremy Show. Tuesday at 9 Central and Wednesday at 1 Central.
Asian men, they've given you a number and they've taken away your name.
Yeah. Asian men. Okay, we are back, and so Finland and Sweden, I mentioned they have female prime ministers. The Swedish prime minister is blonde, and, you know, she's, I guess, around 50, and she's all right. But what about the Finnish prime minister?
Is this the picture you just sent for me?
I did.
Female with brown hair, and she has a black outfit on. She looks like one of the supervillains in Superman 2, one of Zod's supervillains.
Yeah. Sanna Marin is her name. Sanna Marin, and
her black blazer is like all the way down, almost to the bottom or the top of her navel.
Yeah,
she's trying to show cleavage.
Yeah, and no shirt underneath. And this was a big controversy, and her supporters, women and hairy-chested men, in order to show support for her, they all dressed up like that, with like the men showing off their hairy stomachs. It was pretty gross. And I don't know what the point of this is, honestly. She's supposed to be a statesman and not like a Instagram hoe. Is that the word?
I think that's the word, yes.
She's only about 38. What's her name? Sanna Marin. 36. She was born November 16th, 1985. And she's been prime minister for a couple of years, 2.5 years, I guess. So that's...
Yeah, her outfit that she wears reminds me of Superman 2, you know, where Zod was busted out of the Phantom Zone, and he had two supervillains with him. One of them was female. The female was Ursula Douglas. That was the... Ursa was her character name. Sarah Douglas was the actress name. She was a Kryptonian villain, and she had a black outfit where she had cleavage, like almost down to her belly button.
Mm-hmm.
That's what this looks like.
Yeah. Now this girl, and she's very attractive. Here you go. Her biological parents separated, and Marin was brought up by her mother and her mother's female partner.
Yeah.
So she had a mommy and a mommy. A mommy and a stepmommy.
Yes, she has two mommies.
Yeah, two mommies.
So woke.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know a whole lot about Finnish politics. I don't know how it happened. And Finland also has a president. And usually in countries where you have a president and a vice president, most of the European countries... where you have a president and a prime minister, the prime minister is much more important and the president's a figurehead. In a couple of countries, well, like Russia, for instance, obviously the president's the more important and the prime minister just answers to the president. In France, it's kind of a mixed bag. It depends which parties. Like if the president and the prime minister are from the same party, then the president's obviously boss. And if they're from different parties and are political opponents, then there's kind of a struggle going on. And usually the president has sway in defense and foreign affairs, and the prime minister holds sway in internal affairs. In Finland, I'm not exactly sure what the power balance is. I think the president of Finland is more important than most European presidents, but still, this girl, and I'm going to call her a girl. She goes out clubbing. That this girl is calling the shots, and I just find it unbelievable for this country to get possibly dragged into World War III because they've got internet waifu as prime minister.
Yeah.
I mean, she is. I mean, she looks like a waifu. She looks like a Caucasian waifu.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, but I mean, so, you know, Turkey's blocking this. I mean, being part of NATO going against Russia seems to be almost, poisonous, non-desirable. These nations understand that we're on the brink of World War III here. So I think that may explain, you know, Turkey's motivation in not going along with this and blocking it.
Well, one thing about Turkey is geographically, it's right in the middle. You look at Ukraine and Eastern Europe, what could be a war front, and then you look at the Middle East, which is perennially a potential war front. You look what's right in the middle. It's Turkey. It's right across the Black Sea from Ukraine. It borders Syria. It borders Iraq. It borders Iran. It borders Georgia, who another aspirant to NATO membership. So it is right in the middle of it. And then, of course, it also has very, very bad relations with fellow NATO member Greece and a border there. Yeah. So if there's World War III, Turkey's toast. But we are at the second break. We'll be right back.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Hi, Tom Bolton for EaseOff. I know so many of you are finding our EZ4 carcass drop and lift an essential tool for your meat processing operation, but today I want to spotlight four of our new products. First, our right height hog cradles with steel or aluminum frames. Our customers love this back-saving innovation that enhances sanitation and speeds production. Next, our beef cradles with stainless steel or aluminum frames eliminate rust and corrosion. We hope you'll compare our quality and prices for this essential part of your processing line. Our cradles are especially effective when used with our power skinner. And finally, our hook tumbler will keep your hooks clean and polished. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
EaseOff, LLC. 417-932-6419.
You know that nothing beats a storable food stockpile for readiness, but there are two problems with storable food. It's expensive, and eventually, it runs out. Then what? What happens to you or your family when there's not enough food to go around? In a true survival scenario, you need a renewable food source. That's why Seed Armory has developed a survival-grade seed vault that can produce over $25,000 worth of crops from just one kit. Unlike other seed vaults, we don't inflate our seed counts with fillers. All our seeds are 100% heirloom and non-GMO. Not a green thumb? Don't worry. We've written an easy-to-follow guide to guarantee your success from planting to harvest. For a limited time, we're offering an additional 10% off your order when you enter the code RBN at checkout. Go to seedarmory.com. That's seedarmory.com. Don't wait. Like everything else, seeds are in short supply.
Extendivite testimonials on Amazon are very informative. Here's just a few. Carrie: great product, and I will continue to use. I've been taking it for over a year now. I'm 60 and feel great. I would highly recommend this product to anyone over the age of 40. Amazon customer, 5 stars. I'm quite happy about it. Extendivite has relieved what appears to be an angina problem, pain in the chest after climbing stairs, and short on breath. I'm quite happy about it. Amazon customer, 5 stars. Great product. I use regularly, and I rarely get sick. To get your Extendivite today, go to extendivite.com. That's extendivite.com. Or call us at 1-877-928-8822.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
We are back. Okay, and so all of this talk about Finland's hot prime minister, it left kind of like a musky smell in the air. What do we make of it?
Oh, there's a lot of musk over the U.S. recently. Russia Today article, Musk, Elon Musk, raises concerns over the U.S. economy. He says the economy is probably in a recession that could last up to 18 months. The billionaire said this on Monday, and he really slams Joe Biden. I didn't know what to make of this whole Musk buying Twitter thing, but I guess he's bringing Donald Trump back. Make of that what you will. We got another article we can cover on that. But Musk, I think, is a representative of this. Technocracy, maybe somebody on our side of the technocracy,
potentially,
Silicon Valley tier people that see these old school elites going out of control and they're trying to reel them in. I mean, that's sort of what I'm seeing. I think Anglin took a similar view of that. And so his whole purchase of Twitter, is indicative of that. But he's coming out and openly slamming Biden and the economy and, talking about how we're going to go into recession. Let's see if I can get a quote from here. Quoting Musk, these things pass and then there will be a boom times again. It will probably be some tough going for, I don't know, maybe 12 or 18 months. Musk went on to say, what tends to happen is that you have a boom that goes on for too long and you get a misallocation of capital. It starts raining money on fools, basically. I don't know. Maybe he's talking about, like, there's a bubble in the stock market, definitely, where, you know, rando working class people had stimulus checks and they got into the stock market. You had the whole GameStop thing. You've got this whole thing with the common man interacting with the stock market and the Jewish elites not liking it at all. Because a lot of these companies that are taken off, the Jewish elite tried to sell short. And that didn't happen because people bought into it. So, I don't know. What do you make of this whole thing with Musk's predictions of the economy, the stock market, the common man investing? What do you got on this?
Well, you know, the economy, for years and years and years, people have been calling into RBN or other people and saying that, you know, we're going to have hyperinflation. And for years and years and years, it didn't happen. And what was going on was, they were printing a lot of money, but the money that was being printed was winding up in the hands of people who were then just putting it into the stock market or land market assets. And so you were getting inflation, and you were getting what you could call hyperinflation. You were getting a stock market that was going up double digits year after year after year, and in some cases, multiple double digits. That's where the inflationary pressure was all going. It was all going into these asset bubbles. Because the thing is, what determines prices according to market theory? It's supply and demand. Supply and demand of what? Supply and demand for particular products. It's not supply and demand of the overall money supply. If you're going to talk about the overall money supply, then it's the supply, overall supply of money, and then the overall versus the overall demand for all sorts of things that can be bought with money, including assets. So you have to break it down on a viable thing by viable thing basis. And so, yeah, there was a lot more demand for stocks and for real estate, and those prices went up. Why would there have been more demand for milk or bread over the past several years? There wasn't. And what's going on now, it's not that all of a sudden there's more demand for milk or bread or lumber or whatever. The inflation that we're getting in these real things that affect real people is contraction of supply. Because of the COVID nonsense, you had a contraction of the supply of milk and bread and baby food and gasoline and all sorts of other things. Well, I mean, the gasoline has more to do with Russia probably, but for so many of these tangible consumer products, it was a contraction of the supply, and that's led to the inflation, the consumer inflation. Now, the thing is, we haven't had inflation for such a long time. But it was chronic back in the 70s, from, say, maybe the late 60s into the 1980s. We had chronic inflation. And once inflation gets established, and it's only now starting to get established, so we really haven't seen this, then what you start getting is this cycle of, because you have rising prices, then workers demand more higher wages. And then the workers wind up getting the higher wages, and then because the employers are paying higher wages to the workers, they've got to make up for it by raising prices. And then you get that cycle going. So this actually, people say, oh, you print money, and sooner and you're going to get a hyperinflation. Well, this really wasn't because of the printing money. The printing money created this massive asset bubble. And then, of course, once the asset bubble pops, which is going on right now, people with that money are going to look for other things to do with it. But those other things to do with the money coming out of the stock market isn't going to go towards buying more milk and more butter and more bread. It's not. So this is actually a different phenomenon, but it's real. And now we're moving into this inflation, and you know, people around the world are going to be hit by it. People in our country are going to be hit by it. And it just seems to me that with everything else, with the destabilization due to COVID, with the ongoing racial replacement, you know, the great replacement, with all of these things going on, with, you know, and the COVID, what was the COVID? A lot of the COVID was getting into place the infrastructure of totalitarian police state. Well, a lot of that infrastructure is in place now. And the prospect of World War III, civilization is up for a challenge like it's never seen before. That's what I make of it.
Very good. I mean, people, maybe like my mindset, I don't know about you in particular, working class people that see this, when we get money, we're not going to keep it in the stock market. Maybe crypto in the stock market might be an means to an end, right? You invest in crypto to make to double your money, to make $500 into $1,000, and then you take that $1,000 and you go buy weapons and ammunition and storable food and wood stoves. I think a lot of people, especially in America, of this mindset that I'm talking of, are putting their money in real tangible assets. And so that makes me wonder how that's going to, you know, play out in the long term. But no, I mean, overall, you know, I did see this phenomenon of, you know, people taking their the money they got from COVID, you know, the stimulus checks, and paying off their credit cards. Credit card debt went down tremendously during COVID. And then they started getting into the penny stocks, into the stock market. Even in the GameStop, which is not a penny stock, and trying to play the same game the elites play. So that money has to go somewhere. It went into stocks and real estate, and that caused a bubble, and that bubble is going to pop. And what happens when that bubble pops? You know, I guess you addressed some of that. But no, seriously, what happens? Like, for the common man, for the person that bought a house this year that was three times the value that it should be, you know, what happens to them? You know, when they own a house that they paid 200 grand for, but it's really worth 50 grand. You know, it was worth 50 grand like 3 years ago. What happens to their money? Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, for the money fleeing the stock market, it's got to go places, and that money, because you're talking about, I guess, like hundreds of billions of dollars, trillions of dollars, you're talking about massive money. A lot of it just gets completely lost. So a lot of the elites, but also not just the elites, but like retirees, people of that age, they're just going to lose money. They're just going to lose money. That's going away, never really existed in the first place. But you know, the institutional investors and whatnot, they're looking for a place, and there's no obvious place to go to. You know, if you hold the money, if you know, typically if you're moving out of stocks, the institutional investors will go to bonds, and of course, if you buy up bonds, then that puts downward pressure on interest rates. And when interest rates are very, very low, I mean, high interest rates are what is used to combat inflation. When interest rates go really, really low, then other segments of the economy are more likely to borrow and buy. And so to me, it looks like the whole thing is just going to be a giant economic mess. And especially then you've got money being shipped out for war. You're getting all these millions of new people coming in. Like President Trump at one of his rallies recently, he was talking about people saying, sir, don't worry, you can run again in 4 years. And he says, I don't know if we're going to have a country in 4 years. And, you know, that's the wisest thing he's said in a long time.
I mean, like myself, I mean, I invested last year. I had some electric car stocks. I had some crypto and some marijuana stocks. you know, that was play money. I mean, I didn't, if I lost it all, then whatever. But, you know, when I did make money off of it, I turned that into a tangible asset, like ammunition, a wood stove. I sold some property and took that money and, you know, put it in things that, like, you know, food, put it, storable food. I put it in things that I could actually touch that would be worth something. And that's sort of my mindset. And I think a lot of people have that. And so, you know, you get a lot of people thinking of this way that want to weather the storm. So, you know, regardless of what happens in the crash, I mean, if you have gold and ammunition and weapons and tangible assets like a wood stove and storable food, those are going to be tradable. Those are going to be part of a new economy.
Yeah, that works on an individual basis for particularly for rural or people or smaller town people. But, you know, for people who are in ensconced in the suburbs, it's going to be tough, and especially for retired people who aren't working anymore. For people who can still work, you hopefully will still be able to get by. Unless you're underwater on your mortgage or something. Some people will be losing their houses. I just don't see anything good coming of this. And it's hard to even give strategies to people, investment strategies, other than, you know, the survival type of thing that you're giving for those people who are in a position to take advantage of it. You know, what can you do? If you take your money out of the markets and you have it in cash, well, the value of cash is going down. With inflation.
But if you buy a weapon right now, that weapon will probably double in value in the next 5 years.
Yeah. To the extent you can sell it again. I mean, for a lot of people, a lot of older people, weapons aren't even usable because if you don't have the prerequisite knowledge and the prerequisite strength, you know, physical fitness and whatnot, it's unusable.
And that's one thing I have that's marketable is, you know, I'm young and I have a lot of physical abilities, and I work for farmers in the area, and I just don't think they're going to get rid of these multi-million dollar farmers. They're going to weather whatever storm comes. And if you're willing to work for them and able to work for them, you know, one of my assets is work, physical work, strength. That's something that I have to offer on top of the other things that I've set aside. So, I mean, it's not for everybody. I don't know.
Well, you just consider a Ukrainian retiree, somebody who's maybe 65, 70. And people get old fast in that part of the world because of drinking, because of whatnot. And so you just say somebody who's no longer working at the very end of their career in Ukraine, lives in one of these mid-sized cities. What can they do? They can't do anything.
Yeah.
And that type of situation is bound to expand the more that this war goes on. And, you know, it could be coming to a city or town near you. And if you're in your 60s or 70s, you're screwed, or we're screwed.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to do you depressing.
This whole discussion was, you know, originated from an article that I entitled "Musk Courting the Populace," where he, you know, lays this stuff out. I mean, he is very aware of this, and very critical of the Biden administration. So, I don't know. Musk reinstating Trump on Twitter. What have we got left for the break? Do we want to get into this?
Yeah, we're coming up at the break right now. Well, we got about a minute.
So why should we care? Okay, so Trump gets back on Twitter, maybe even runs in 2024. You know, I know there's the whole free speech thing on Twitter, and it seems like it's happening. If Trump allows anybody and everybody that was banned to come back on, that could totally change the whole conversation of the nation. You know, that could change the way things are going. But what do we care about Trump? I mean, do we really want Trump back in? Is he going to do anything different or better? Different meaning better. You know, is he going to appoint better people? Will he even get in? So, I mean, it, the question to you is, what's the significance of Trump, of Elon Musk reinstating Trump on Twitter?
Yeah, and I think the significance is whether you like it or not, and a lot of people don't. There may well be no alternative to supporting Donald Trump, because anything other than Donald Trump in 2024, if we still have a country by then, is bound to be nightmarish. And not that Trump was a pleasant dream. But anyway, we're at the break. We'll be right back.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because Big Tech, Big Pharma, and Big Brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we, the people, are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
And we are back. Okay, so as I did say, this is election day, and the most watched races seem to be in Pennsylvania. You've got three races that are being watched. One is governor, and you've got a Republican primary that is a contested primary, and this is there's a Doug Mastriano, who was a big Stop the Steal guy. One of the few, I mean, he was a state senator who was on the Slattery plan saying that Pennsylvania should send a slate of Trump electors to Washington, right? That they should they should disregard the corrupt election. And then I've visited his website, and he's very, very common sense about a bunch of other stuff, like COVID lockdowns. There will never be any more COVID lockdowns, this type of thing. So he seems pretty common sense, and he seems to have pulled in the lead, although there's still a lot of votes to be counted. But that's one. The next is the Senate race, Republican Senate race, and this is where Trump got involved. Oh, and by the way, if this Mastriano wins, he's going to be going up against the Jewish attorney general, who was very much a co-conspirator in the fake election of 2020. His name's Shapiro, something Shapiro. And then both the Republican and Democrat races for U.S. Senate in Pennsylvania are competitive. You've got Dr. Oz, who is now in second place, but I think he may win. There's three people involved. Dr. Oz, who's Trump's favorite, and you know he's got pluses and minuses. Then you've got this Dave McCormick, who is literally a hedge fund manager, who used to be an assistant secretary of treasury under Bush and is married to Dina Powell, who was the assistant national security advisor, who was leaking all this information about Russia, which was all a bunch of BS. Worst person you could imagine. And then the other person is this black lady, Kathy Barnett, black conservative, and her conservative values are maximum war with Russia. So you got that. Maybe not the greatest selection, but I think Trump's picked the right person. And then on the Democrat side, actually, it's not that competitive. There's this guy who's already been declared the winner. His name's John Fetterman, who's an enormous Jew. When I say enormous, I mean like 6'8", 400 pounds. He's the current lieutenant governor, and he prides himself on having presided over the first gay marriage in Pennsylvania when he was mayor of some town. And, you know, that's all what he's about. So you're going to have Dr. Oz or one of those other two people going against this enormous Jew with a bunch of tattoos. He doesn't say he's Jewish, but Fetterman's a very Jewish name, and he won't say what his religion is. So I'm assuming he's a Jew, but he is big and fat. That's for sure. Any questions? How's Rand Paul doing? I guess he's doing just fine, right?
I think he's going to hold on. I mean,
does he have a challenger?
Rand came out on the he had several, but he came out on the good side of the pandemic, pushing against it. Rand is a favorite around here, unlike Mitch McConnell, who we all disdain, but Rand Paul, I think he's got this sewn up because he's got his pulse. He's got his finger on the pulse of the populace. And he knows, sort of what the people of Kentucky want. And he's not perfect by any means, but he's came out on the right side of many issues regarding the pandemic and even the Ukraine issue, where he's holding up the $40 billion, to sort of say, hey, where's this stuff going? You know, maybe not asking all the right questions, but definitely going in the right direction. So I think Rand's got this sewn up. Okay. And then other than Rand, we just had a few sheriff and legislative candidates.
Okay, and then I don't have the North Carolina stuff in front of me, but people can refer to their own news source. But thank you for joining me.
Thank you, Patrick. Stay classy.
Okay, and I'll be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio.
Someone threw a Molotov cocktail into the office of a pro-life group in Wisconsin. The official White House statement said, President Biden strongly condemns this attack and political violence of any stripe. First of all, official statement? President Biden couldn't comment himself? Second, someone throws a firebomb and this administration strongly condemns the action. But speak out at a school board against critical race theory in elementary school and you're a domestic terrorist. The MAGA movement is the most extreme political movement in our country has ever seen. Defend yourself during a riot and you're a racist. January 6th attendees are held under the jail without due process for attacking democracy itself. Firebombing a pro-lifer, strongly condemned. This administration is a partisan blend of hyperbole and hypocrisy. Find more news and commentary at liberty-lighthouse.com until tomorrow. See this Pacem. Parabellum.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.